You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastian.
In the books, it's one thing we tried really hard to do is to, number one, portray wildlife as its beautiful natural self. And then also we want the kids to understand some of the natural processes that are there. These books are for young children, 5 and under, so we don't get like real deep into concepts, but we sprinkle concepts in there that are understandable for the young age groups. And then we also make sure that we add a little bit of conservation ethic to each book so that, you know, from a very young age, these concepts are ingrained in the next generation so that they can grow up hopefully being the conservationists that we want them to be.
Hey, Bird Dog Babes. My name is Courtney Bastian, and I am obsessed with all things bird dogs. And I'm here with you to share the stories, experiences, knowledge, and opinions from the women and a few guys in the industry that are killing it. I'm a Wisconsin girl living in a Montana world. I'm mom and 2 incredible kiddos, wife and occasional assistant to a pro gun dog trainer, traveling the U.S. talking about canine nutrition while hunting, breeding, and competing with my German wire hair pointers and Bronco Italianos. As someone who started hunting later in life because I wanted to give my dogs the opportunity to do what they were bred to do, I'm here to help inspire, educate, and connect women to get their bird dogs out in the field and experience a bond like no other. So pour yourself a glass of wine and get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn. This is the Bird Dog Babe Podcast. A big shout out to the people and partners that are helping me keep the MP3s rolling for this podcast. My Patreon patrons, the bread and butter, the peeps, the community of like-minded individuals that are eager to learn and offer to contribute. Join us for $5 per month on patreon.com/thebirddogbabe for exclusive discounts, content, and live Q&A sessions. 5% of your contribution goes to the AKC Canine Health Foundation, and 5% goes to conservation. Dakota 283 Unparalleled Protection Rotomold Kennels. My favorite is the G3. It has a molded-in, easy-to-grab handle on top that makes it easy for me to lift in and out of my truck. The keyed paddle latching door makes me feel at ease on trips when I run into the gas station or a restaurant for a bite to eat and I'm not able to bring the dogs in with me. Go to Dakota283.com and use promo code BIRDDOGBABE for 10% off. And by Siren, shotguns for women. Siren carries the only full line of women's shotguns. They are dedicated to providing the equipment and knowledge that makes shooting and hunting more enjoyable and less stressful. Newer season hunter, Siren offers multiple options that fit right out of the box. No more compromises. Go to SirenUSA.com and check out all the options available for upland, waterfowl, sporting, and trap shotguns. And while you're there, say hello to Julia, Siren's new 12-gauge sporting that is one of the most stunning shotguns I've laid my eyes on. Also by Big Frig, roto-molded coolers with heavy-duty latches, dual stainless steel lock plates that double as bottle openers. They also have dry boxes, tumblers, and growlers. And my favorite, the ability to customize the tumblers and coolers. Head to thebirddogbabe.com/Big Frig. To view the wide array of sizes and colors available, there's a Badlands cooler perfect for your way of life. I just returned home late last night from my first chucker hunt, so I'm getting this episode out a bit later in the day than usual. But hey, it's still Tuesday, and I've yet to miss a Tuesday publish because I'm that dedicated to you, my listeners, that even with raging shin splints and a mile-long to-do list, I'm here for you. And about that chucker hunt, well, stay tuned because I'm recording an episode later this week that is going to be a great listen. Mark your calendars for this Friday, January 22nd, and join us on patreon.com/thebirddogbabe for another monthly session of Beyond the Podcast, where William and I will be going over the conditioned retrieve process. How many of you had issues with your dog's retrieve or lack of retrieve this year? Well, Now is the perfect time since the season is ending and testing hasn't started yet. Everything we're going to teach you, you can do right at home. You don't like the method of throwing an e-collar on your dog and making them retrieve? Yeah, me neither. Join us this Friday, January 22nd at 8:30 Central Standard Time for a live training session and the opportunity for questions at the end. It's $5 to join the session. Go to patreon.com/thebirddogbabe now, and I'll be posting a link to live session on Friday. My guest today is James Gibran. James and his brother Luke created Smile Outside children's books. As avid outdoorsmen, hunters, and conservationists themselves, they started a business to educate, engage, and teach children about the importance of conservation. Their books provide a link to introduce kids to wildlife in a realistic approach, different from animated characters in most other children's books. Even if you don't have kids, you no doubt know a friend's kids or your nieces and nephews who would love and benefit from these books. We also talk bird dogs, of course, and about the Chachalaca. And because this company is amazing, they're offering all the Bird Dog Babe podcast listeners a promo code for 10% off. So be sure to listen to the end. All right, let's get after it. Hey, James, welcome to the podcast. How you doing?
Good, Courtney. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad we were able to get connected through our crazy weather here this time.
Yes, definitely.
If you could start us out, and I know, so you're a teacher, right?
Yes, I teach high school science. I do aquatic science, robotics, and engineering for one of the high schools up here.
So are you guys going full-time right now?
Right now, the students in our district have the option, the parents have the option to either have the students do virtual or to do in-person or a combination of the two. Most of our district, the kids right now are virtual, but the teachers are in the classroom and we have a few kids that are in-person.
If you could tell us a little bit about what inspired you to start writing children's books. Was this something that you had thought of for a while, or was there something specifically that made you jump into it?
It was actually something that I had never thought about until it all happened. I was reading a book to my son, Adam, who at the time he was almost 3 years old. And in the book, there was a particular sentence that talked about quail quacking. And I think that it was meant to be a joke by the author, but I know a lot of people that aren't as outdoor savvy might not understand the difference. And some kids I feared might grow up thinking that quails quack. And it frustrated me, along with all the other anthropomorphization that I see in children's books. I think that it built up. I said something to my brother at the moment he was there, and I expressed my frustration with that book in particular. And he challenged me at that very moment. He said, "Well, why don't you do something better?" I don't think he was being 100% serious at the time. I think he was more trying to get me to shut up about my complaining. But I looked at him. I said, "Okay, that's a great idea." And then we kind of just started right then and there, started like writing ideas of what kind of books we would write. And 2.5 years later, this is where we are. We're selling books and having a great time doing it.
Yeah. And I mean, and like you had mentioned it, and I feel it's not only in the children's books that, you know, you kind of have these characters of illusions that aren't the way it actually goes, but even in children's movies and TV shows, I feel like it's all over.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. And I mean, you see it everywhere. There's animals that are very human-like. And they are wearing clothes, they're having human emotions. And I understand like why film writers do that and why authors do that. you know, it's very engaging for the children. But at the same time, I think number one, I think that children can appreciate wildlife for being wild and being an actual animal and in its natural beauty. But also, I think down the road it leads to bigger problems. I think that a lot of studies are showing right now that the way that we as society are viewing wildlife is manifesting itself in a way that we are trying to dictate wildlife conservation with emotion rather than science. And that, I think, is going to be a long-term problem if we continue that, because if we continue to allow emotion to guide us in biological studies, then the science gets left behind, and that's not a good recipe for success.
And what I really appreciate that you guys are doing in your books is that it's all based around conservation. And, you know, I think of the movie Bambi. So it's a movie that came out in, what, like 1940s, maybe? But you think of the movie and how it portrays a hunter. And, you know, I grew up thinking when I watched that movie of those awful hunters. You see, you know, the birds flying up and getting shot, and they were so scared to fly up. And then the deer hunting, nowhere in there is it explained why they're out there hunting and what they're doing, how they're harvesting it. It's going to be feeding a family. Absolutely. You know, it's just portrayed as those awful hunters that are doing these things to the deer. And obviously it's beyond my time period of when it came out. But I don't know. It's just kind of mind blowing to me, because that was one of my favorite movies. And forever, you know, when I'd see deer and hunters, I would think, oh, how awful.
I totally understand. And not a lot has changed in the last 80 years since that film has come out. I think you're spot on about the early 40s about that. And unfortunately, even today, the new stuff that's coming out, I have to, like, cut the cartoons and stuff. I have to, like, change the channel when my son's watching, because I don't want him to be inundated with these negative images of hunters.
Right. Yeah. We're pretty much a wild kratz house here. And that's how we do a lot of it. You know, they learn a lot about the animals that way, but it'd be nice to get some of that hunting and conservation portion into it as well. But I think that's something that we as parents can focus on just by bringing them with and getting them in the outdoors.
Oh, absolutely. And in the books, it's one thing we tried really hard to do is to, number one, portray wildlife as its beautiful natural self. And then also we want the kids to understand some of the natural processes that are there. These books are for young children, 5 and under, so we don't get, like, real deep into concepts, but we sprinkle concepts in there that are understandable for the young age groups. And then we also make sure that we add a little bit of conservation ethic to each book, so that, you know, from a very young age, these concepts are ingrained in the next generation, so that they can grow up hopefully being the conservationists that we want them to be.
And is that something, did you and your brother grow up in the outdoors, or what was your upbringing like that you wanted to make sure that was a part of your son's life?
Big time. Yeah. We were in the outdoors since before any of us can remember. We'd go fishing as a whole family. My brother and I, my two sisters, my parents, my dad would take my brother and I hunting. Back then, I don't know if it was because the sisters weren't interested in it or if it was just a way of the times, but the boys were taken hunting and the girls didn't go. I know my sisters never expressed, to me at least, ever an interest in going. And actually, my older sister is a pretend vegetarian, so I definitely don't see her wanting to go hunting. But we grew up in Texas. And we were born in Texas, actually, and moved to California very early on. We spent a long time in California. about a decade, and then we spent another decade plus in Florida before now my brother and I and my parents actually are back here in Texas. My sisters are in Virginia.
And what kind of hunting did you do growing up?
We started out like a lot of hunters with a small game and bird hunting, ducks, dove, rabbits, squirrels, quail. And as my brother and I got older, we started developing more of an interest in big game hunting, which was not something that my father really ventured into much. And we actually were the ones kind of helping him get into that as he and I got more established in the big game world. But we pretty much, if there's a hunting season for something, that chances are that we've hunted for it. We love hunting all kinds of animals, and we love eating all kinds of animals too.
You're doing all of that now today as well, the same animals, big game and upland that you were back then?
I try to, yes. I have a bird dog of my own, a griff, a wire-hair pointing griffon. She's getting up there in age. She's 11 now. She just turned 11 last week. But I take her hunting. We do a lot of waterfowl hunting down here on the Texas coast. I do a little bit of upland whenever I can. It's hard to find good upland opportunities on public lands here. So we don't get after that as much as we'd like to, but we definitely make a point of getting out there at least a couple times a year and getting her on some birds. And then we do a lot of big game hunting as well. We apply across a few states in the West for elk, pronghorn, mule deer, et cetera. And we do a lot of whitetail hunting here in Texas.
What made you want to get the griffon? Did you have bird dogs growing up?
No, and my family, we never had dogs growing up at all. My first dog was a Labrador when I was 16. He was a black lab, Duke. I got him when he was 6 months old for $100 at a puppy mill. And I had these fantasies of training him up to be a waterfowl hunter. And that really never happened at all. He was actually a real, real stubborn dog, and he had his own ways. But time went on, and as I got older and needed another dog, I started doing a lot more research and trying to find the right dog for me and my family. I wanted a dog that was going to be able to behave itself indoors and be calm and gentle, and then be a hunting machine in the field. And I researched all kinds of breeds. I was really interested in versatile breeds because I do a lot of waterfowl hunting, and I wanted to make sure that I had a dog that would be a good retriever in the water. And my brother, Luke, he actually brought this breed to my attention. And at first I was kind of turned off by it because just their initial appearance. It takes a real knowledge of the breed to be able to appreciate their ugly beauty. They're big, hairy, wiry dogs. But at first glance, you're like, whoa, what is that? And it looks like something that was just rolled out of a mud pile. But once you get to know the breed and you understand a little bit better, they're actually a really great dog. I think they're beautiful. And she does everything I ask. She'll track, she'll retrieve, she'll point sometimes. And but she's a great dog. The breeder I got her from, he's a great guy. He's been doing it for a long time. He does really selective breeding. And she's just a great dog.
That's awesome. Will you get another griffon next?
You know, there are a lot of breeds that I just have like the fantasy of training up and seeing what they're like. Unfortunately, my life is not going to be long enough to experience all of them. So when and if I get another dog, there's a high probability that I'll go with a griff again, just because it's a tried and true breed for me. And I love their demeanor and I love their work ethic.
Yeah, they're fantastic. They're a great, great breed.
Have you hunted over many of them?
Yeah, I have. I have. I have German wire hair pointers myself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we've trained some griffons, and actually our NAVDA chapter here, they could nearly be a griffon NAVDA chapter because we have so many in them. So yeah, they're very popular in our area.
So my Griff Grin, she has really short hair for her breed. There's not a breed standard on the length of the coat, but she has really short hair. It's really tight. And it's so funny. I get a lot of people thinking, they come up to me like bragging that they know the kind of dog I have. I'm like, oh, really? I didn't. Not a lot of people do. And they go, yeah, it's a German wire hair. I'm like, oh, no, it's not. Yeah. But yeah. Those are great dogs too. I'm not knocking the wire hairs.
Nope, they're both great breeds. Oh, hey, speaking of bird dogs, I want to take a quick second to share an opportunity for you to help the AKC Canine Health Foundation, which is the largest nonprofit funder of health research focused solely on dogs. If you're one of my Patreon patrons, a portion of your $5 per month goes to the AKC Canine Health Foundation. I've partnered with them to fundraise for three initiatives: hemangiosarcoma, epilepsy, and tick-borne disease. I'll be mailing out one of their calendars to each person that donates. So head over to www.akcchf.org/birddogbabe to designate a dollar amount and which initiative you would like to support. I'll throw in a cool Bird Dog Babe sticker in the mailing as well. Come on, Bird Dog Babe community, let's help this amazing foundation get closer to answers on these issues that are affecting our bird dogs. Training with her, did you do that yourself?
Did you
have different resources?
My main reason, I read a lot of books, and I ended up settling for the most part on the techniques that are in the book that NAVDA publishes on training your own bird dog. Mm-hmm. I followed that for the most part, and it's a really concise way to build your bird dog up. And I was really happy with the results. I know some areas where I was lacking personally, that on the next dog I have that I need to improve on, but the steps in that book really gave me a solid foundation on building Brain up to be a really, really good retriever and a really great pointer at one point. I've slacked off on the training, and our lack of upland birds, just her pointing is not where it should be anymore, unfortunately. It's my fault.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's not your fault necessarily. You know, there's different ways and means to do that, but right, with the lack of upland birds, that gets to be tough.
It does.
And you do a lot of waterfall hunting with her, you said?
Oh, yeah, a lot. Yeah, it's so awesome because it's not uncommon if you don't have a dog and you're waterfowl hunting in a marsh, in these salt grass marshes, it's really thick, really hard. If your bird is crippled, it's so often the case where you don't recover a bird. But with her, in the last decade, I've probably only lost maybe two or three birds, and it's been such a great conservation tool, and I really enjoy seeing her work out there.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And I love what you just mentioned there, that as a conservation tool, you know, because the dogs are a big piece of having successful recovery of the game, and really. Yeah, especially with waterfall hunting.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some retrieves that she's made and some birds that she's found that I just don't even know how it was even possible. And I was those proud dad moments, I guess. And I like them. Mm-hmm. I like watching her do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the conservation, going back to that a little bit, being a big part of what you're doing in the books, you guys, with each sale, you're donating some money from that to different conservation organizations. How are you working that?
Yeah, so right as of right now, we have three conservation partners. We have the Texas chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. We have Quail Forever and Pheasants Forever as conservation partners. And as for the books, every single book, we have a set of five books and a set of three books, but every single book, individual book that we sell, we set aside at least 50 cents from each of those books to go towards conservation. So for at retail price, it's a full retail price, it's around 7% of the sale goes to conservation.
Okay.
And that was a really important thing for Luke and I, as we kind of like started building the plan for the company, is it, it, a big part of it was we wanted to find a way that we could give to conservation more than we were able to on our normal salaries. And we really wanted to leverage the company as a tool for conservation. And that's the way we decided to do it. And it's been going great. And we hope that, you know, we can continue to add more groups to that list as we build the company and sell more books and just give and give and give. That's what we want to do.
So you just mentioned there, I mean, are you in the works of doing, continuing on more series then?
Oh, we have lists and lists and lists of books that we want to do. The hard part right now is figuring out which books to do next. And we have a really good idea right now about the next individual book that we want to do. There's a good chance that we're going to release an individual book, which we haven't done until this next one. And I don't want to give too much away because I don't want to be wrong and have our minds change. But if we go with what I'm thinking right now, I think your listeners in particular will be very happy with it.
Awesome. That's very exciting. And I was just going to ask, like, is there going to be some kind of a bird dog book in the works?
I would love to see a bird dog book come out of our company.
Awesome. So the books you guys have right now. So 2 years ago, your first series came out. Is that right?
About a year and a half ago, August of 2019, August 1st of 2019, we sent out our first book. So just over a year, almost a year and a half ago. And then this past August, we released our conservation series 2. So it's 8 books total now that we've put out in the last year and change. And it's been going really good. We are so excited about just putting out more material. Like I said, we have so many books that we want to do, and it's just a matter of slowing ourselves down and not getting ahead of ourselves. And we only have a limited amount of money to make books, so we gotta kind of just wait and get more sales and build that up one step at a time, because it's really easy to get out of control and just say, okay, let's do all these ideas that we have, and then that wouldn't be good for the bank account.
Right. So your first series, the conservation series 1 is what it's called. There's 5 books in there. You have Ducks and Geese, Coyote Lost Her Voice, Antlers, Pheasants and Quail, and then the 5th one is Clean Water. So the one Coyote Lost Her Voice, that kind of is intriguing to me on how you work, what that story would be about. Can you summarize that a little bit?
Yes. So we wanted to cast a pretty broad net in our first series to get as much attention and as much feedback as we could from the public. And so we kind of spread ourselves all around the different kind of animals of the North America. And the Coyote Lost Her Voice was originally, the idea of it was to build a book based on predators. And so in that book, there's coyotes, there's wolves, there's foxes, there's big cats and bears. And of course, we definitely did not want to name the book Predators for a children's book. That just sounded really creepy. So we had to come up with an alternate way to present that book. So in that book, a coyote, she wakes up and she discovers that she no longer is able to howl. So she goes in search of it. And in that search, she passes by all these other animals before the end of the book, she finally can howl again. But so that book was kind of like tiptoeing on the line of anthropomorphizing her. We try really hard to make sure that we didn't give her a name or a voice. So she's not talking in the book. She's definitely not wearing any clothing, and she has no jewelry or other accessories. But it's just a way to introduce those animals without just saying, hey, this is a book about predators. So I don't want to scare kids or give parents a creepy vibe.
Right. You guys really focus on not only the education and conservation, but also the engagement of it. So I think, like, wasn't it one of your goals to introduce as many different animals in, was it North America? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a big focus on what you're doing?
Yeah, so we really are trying to introduce kids to wildlife in North America for now. Who knows what the future holds about expanding past North America, but for now we're focusing on North America. And if there's a hunter out there who picks up these books, they'll immediately recognize these animals that we are introducing as game animals or fur bearers. So it's not like we're introducing chipmunk or other animals that there's no hunting seasons for. So it's very much geared toward a hunting audience, but in a way that is palatable and can be received by the non-hunting public as well as a valuable tool to introduce our kids to wildlife.
In your second series, the conservation series two, you guys just launched that a couple months ago, didn't you?
Yep, we sure did. And one is about fish. So we switched gears and went towards aquatic life. And in that series, it's a 3-book series. We have 3 books. One's called Fun Fish, which focuses on warm water species like largemouth bass, smallmouth bass, bluegill, pike, and a whole bunch of other warm water species. That one was illustrated by one artist, our artist from our previous set of books, Anna Ortiz. She illustrated Fun Fish. And then what we did unique was in this set of 3, we decided to go with 3 different artists. We wanted to bring in some more people to the mix here just to add some variety. So one of the books is called Cold Water, and that's a book about fly fishing for trout and char species. And that cool. book was illustrated by Garrison Dock over from Water. He's a really talented artist, and that one's done with pastels. So it's a completely different look than the watercolors from Anna Ortiz's illustrations. And then the 3rd book is called Reef, about reef fish and reef ecosystems. And that one was done by Abby Cleek, who did it in a digital format. So we have 3 different formats, 3 different artists that look completely different, but they come together to make a really beautiful set of books that we're really proud about.
Mm-hmm. And is that going to be, are the themes, are they kind of similar throughout the first series and second series then, as far yeah. as the color and the, not animation, that's not the right word for it, but, and the way that the appearance is?
Yeah, we still make sure there's a lot of color in there for the kids to catch their eyes, and we still have the fish illustrated in realistic fashions. So the kids are flipping through and there's no fish that are big cartoony googly eyes, with sunglasses mm-hmm. on or anything. They're fish. They're real fish that look amazing. They look like fish. They're identifiable as a fish in a specific species, which is kind of one of the things I don't like about other books, is that a lot of the animals in other books, you could very easily just change the color of it and it could be a completely different animal, and it doesn't really tell a kid exactly what it is, and the cartoon version of it from differs so much from the actual version of the animal that the two are pretty indistinguishable from each other.
Right, where you almost
distinguishable, yes,
the kids wouldn't even be able to recognize it.
Right.
Yeah, and I've actually had that problem. I do flashcards with the kids of, my 3-year-old identifies different animals in flashcards and different objects and things. And what was it? One was I'm trying to think. It was a turkey, it was an ostrich. The flashcard was an ostrich, and my daughter always thinks it's a turkey because it has these big feathers up around its head and it's wearing sunglasses and sneakers. I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah,
exactly. So there's another idea for you, James. There's another turkey idea. Song. Get some flashcards that are realistic. Yeah, we love doing flashcards.
Flashcards are the best.
what is kind of that process of coming out with children's books? That's kind of interesting to me and how that works, because it seems like your idea that you and your brother had, it went pretty quickly from idea to publishing.
So from original idea, it took about a year for us to release our first set of books from the time we started planning.
Okay.
We figured things out a little better, so we were able to streamline that a lot for the second set, and we probably cut that in half probably. But that's also, we had three different artists working too. So if we had just one artist working on all three books, it would have been pushed back a few more months, because the artwork is really the most time consuming part. And he and I have zero talent whatsoever in that realm, which is why we sought out professional help for that. So he and I write the books. We kind of divide them up between each other, and one of us will write one, and one of us will write a different one. And we initially start off as zero input from each other and just come up with our own original ideas before we bring it together and look at it together. And then we'll discuss areas that we like and dislike. And those conversations, I thought originally would be difficult conversations to have. He and I bump heads a lot in life, but in certain things like hunting and fishing, we're always in the same point. And with the company so far, we've done so good at working together and communicating our thoughts that it's actually really, really impressive to see my little brother and myself just, you know, doing so well. But
that's really cool.
Yeah, it is. And so we once we hash that out, then we rewrite things, and then once we have that somewhat final draft, we'll take it to an artist and say, this is what we're thinking. And we've given them very, very general ideas of what we want, and given them the ability to use their creative insights to draw or paint or write what's in their mind, rather than trying to create something that they are told to create, which I think gives them an ability to do a much better job than we'd be able to tell them how to do it, if that makes any sense.
Sure. Yep, it does. And is there a set number of pages per book that you guys have?
So the size of these books have 14 inside pages and then a front and back cover. That's just the size we've chose for the ones that we've done so far. You know, we've discussed in the future doing other books, bigger books, and books for older kids that would be different format books. These books are board books, so we've talked about doing other books as well for older kids in the future as well.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And actually, that was going to be my next question is, the age, because you had said these are for about five and under, if you were going to look to expand that at all.
Yeah, it's eventually we want to be able to be a company that kids can learn from regardless of their age, and be an integral part in introducing kids to wildlife and to conservation. And of course, as they get older, they need materials that can follow them in that path as well. And we want to be able to provide that for them in the future as well.
You guys are a part of the 2% for conservation as well, right? In part of this process with the books?
Yeah, we're very proud to be able to put that label on our product. For those who don't know what 2% for conservation is, it's a conservation organization that certifies businesses as conservation loving folks, which their standard is at least 1% of their time donated to conservation, and at least 1% of their money goes back to conservation as well. So they have a check and balances with us every year that we work out, and we show to them, you know, that we meet that standard, and then they allow us to use their symbol on our product and call ourselves 2% for conservation certified. And something that we're super proud of. And we hope that every time that we talk about it, that there's another company out there that is listening that gets the idea that that might be good for them. And I highly encourage companies to go to their website mm-hmm. and check it out. And definitely it's something yeah. that's really awesome.
It's a fantastic organization for sure. And it's not just for companies as well. So individuals can also pledge the 2%.
That's a good point. Thank you for stating
certification
that.
As well. Yeah. Cause I think I did that earlier in the year last year, because it's a pretty cool thing to do. And it's a way to give back, because it's not just about giving time in conservation or just giving money. It's having that dedication to do both, because that is what it takes.
For sure. And, you know, not to discourage anybody who can only give time or to only give money, you know, give what you can, but definitely. I'm glad that you yourself certified for that. And that's one more reason that I like Bird Dog Babe.
Yeah, and it's cool, in Montana we can support it, you know, a little bit when we go get the license plates for our vehicles. I don't know if they're going to start doing that in other states now or not, but we have a 2% for conservation license plate here in Montana.
So cool. Listen, y'all up in Montana are some conservation loving fools up there. Okay. I was up there this past summer, and I have a 2% for conservation sticker on my truck, and I've never, mm-hmm. ever in Texas or anywhere else I've driven had anyone comment on it. When I was in Montana for that week and a half, I had 4 people mention it. And I was like, wow. Yep. So good for Montanans.
It's pretty cool. And it was neat. It's something you're starting to see and hear more. And you're right. I was in one of my grouse hunting trips this season, a guy drove by and had the sticker on the back of his truck as well. So cool. It's neat to see. And you just, you know, it's somebody like, you just want to flag them down and have a conversation, because
you do.
You just know, you know, it's going to be a like-minded person that you're going to enjoy talking with.
Good people for sure.
Yep, absolutely. Game bird recipe. I'm really curious. This is like one of my favorite questions for my guests, and what your favorite game bird recipe is. And you do a lot of waterfowl, so we can go that route too, or both upland and waterfowl, because I'm curious.
I have 2 that are in mind, and I'm gonna blow you away with one of them, because I would wager that most people have never heard of it. The first one for waterfowl, it's super simple. A lot of people try to overcomplicate waterfowl. I like taking breast meat and just doing a really hot, really fast sear and eating it like a raw steak, just salt and pepper. I think that is the best way to have duck. But a lot of times the legs and the thighs go to waste. And I highly encourage anybody to keep those legs and thighs and just stick them in a crock pot for several hours with whatever seasoning you want. I tend to do a taco seasoning, and then pick that meat and have duck tacos. And it is fantastic.
That would be good.
Because the thing with the legs and the thighs, they have all those like those really hard stringy parts like a turkey leg has.
The tendons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So it's really difficult to just eat. But if you pick the meat after it's been crock potted for several hours, it's super tender and really delicious.
Okay.
As for upland, we have the probably the second rarest upland bird in North America here in Texas. It's called a chachalaca, and it's not a made-up word. It's C-H-A-C-H-A-L-L-C-A, I think. I'm sure I butchered that. It's called chachalaca. It's an upland game bird that lives in the very, very southern part of Texas along the Mexican border and then down in through Mexico. If I was to describe a chachalaca, it's kind of like a combination between a pheasant and a quail in size, like somewhere in the middle ground there. But they are an arboreal bird where they live in the tops of the trees. They don't spend a whole lot of time on the ground. They live up the top of the trees and eating leaves and seeds. So it's a super weird hunt. You're you don't see them. They're like, it's a jungle bird. So it's really interesting. But the meat on them are super white meat. And it's bar none the best bird meat I've ever had in my entire life. And it's tough, though. It's a little bit tough. So I do it the exact same way as I do my duck legs and thighs, as I season it with taco seasoning. I like tacos a lot. And then I crock pot it and I pick
that meat. I get that.
It's so easy and delicious. But
yeah.
But it's the best bird on the planet. I'll take that to the bank. I'll challenge anybody to make me a liar. So come on down to Texas and find out.
So it's like a white meat.
Very white, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Say the word again. Say the bird.
Chachalaca.
Chachalaca.
Yeah.
Chachalaca. I'm gonna do some research on this. I've never heard of it before. Is it like in a grouse family?
No.
It's
in the same family. Oh, what is that? As
are they flying like a blue grouse then?
Surprisingly, even less than a blue grouse. They kind of just hop from limb to limb and then do short little spurts to other treetops. And it's so thick in the trees that they're living in that you just barely see glimpses of them, but you hear them. And the first time you hear them, you may have never heard the sound before. You may not see the bird, but when you hear the sound, you're like, that must be the sound of a chachalaca, because it just sounds like so different from anything that we have ever heard before. And they're in the trees and they could be 10 feet in front of you and you just not see them because it's so thick where they're eating leaves.
Okay. So I just saw a little thing that Hank Shaw said. He said, chachalaca tastes like a wild chicken, mild, dense, flavorful in a way that a pheasant or even a ruffed grouse is not. Well, that says a lot.
Very.
Huh.
That's way more eloquent than I could say.
I need to put this on my list. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I mean, there's a spot that I go down to. I know they're there. It's a really strange hunt. It's not a hunt, unfortunately, that bird dogs per se are really of use. A retriever would be nice, but they're unless your dog is used to pointing squirrels in trees, it's kind of a hindrance
because they're just going treetop to treetop,
right? And they're super wary, and if they see you, they're hopping along and they're gone before you even can see them. So it's a strange hunt. It's a really weird hunt. But if you do want to come down,
just is it fun?
Oh, it's super fun.
Is it like fun and challenging, or are they not pressured so they're sitting up there like early season Montana grouse?
I don't think they're that easy. I don't know how much pressure they get, to be honest. There's only like a small handful of public properties down here that allow hunting for them. I think there's maybe like five or six public properties down in South Texas that allow hunting for them. Now there's only three counties in total that you're allowed to hunt them. And I know on private property, I'm sure they're probably hunted as well, but I've been down there 3 years in a row and I've seen them every single time. So I've only got them once, one out of 3 years.
Is there what's the limit on them? Are they five. More of a rare species?
No, five. I'll have to go back to my Instagram and tag you on a couple of photos of them when we're done here. Yeah,
please do.
Yeah, they're super cool. I like strange things that are unique, and this definitely fits the bill. The only bird I think that is probably more rare in North America is probably the Himalayan snowcock. So
yeah,
which is a non-native, so it doesn't really count. I probably just offended somebody.
Cool. No, I definitely need to check these birds out. And they look which one do you have there? The plain? The plain chachalaca?
The plain chachalaca.
Okay.
If you go to the Texas Parks and Wildlife webpage, they have information there about our version.
Mm-hmm. Do you hear them? Like, you know how grouse, you hear them going through the woods. Do you hear a chachalaca flush?
Yeah, if you flush one, you definitely hear it. I mean, because they're not graceful. Like it sounds like a chicken flapping. Like they're not birds of flight. They're birds of like short burst. Like I'm not talking like quail bursts. I'm talking even less of a burst than a grouse. It's weird. I don't know how to describe it other than that.
They're just super unique.
I'm trying to wrap my mind around it as I'm talking, and it's just a super unique bird. It's really yummy.
Yeah. Well, and they feed on fruit and berries and seeds and flowers. So
yeah, I opened up the crop of one, and it was just full of like whole leaves and berries, and I was like, wow, that is something else.
Neat. Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. All right. Sorry. I'll move on. I'm stuck there for a while. I didn't realize there was a bird species here that I haven't heard of.
It's a secret.
We can hunt. Well, your next project coming out, like what is the approximate time frame for that?
Most likely when we release something, It won't be until after spring. I would guess we have a lot going on right now. Some really cool projects that we're doing right now that is taking a little bit of our time. So definitely we won't be releasing anything until after the spring for sure.
Okay. All right. Cool. Where can listeners find out more about the Smile Outside books? I know you're on Instagram, and so tell us your handle there.
Our Instagram is like our main activity area, and that's _smile_outside. And we have pictures of the books, of course, but a lot of folks are so awesome, and they send us pictures of their little kids enjoying the books, and we love sharing those with everybody. Those are the kinds of things that we do this for, and it's really good to just get that feedback from parents and kids alike. So our Instagram is our main spot. We also have a Facebook page. We're not as active on the Facebook, but it's there. And then of course you can go to the website, and that's smileoutside.com. You can purchase books through the website, and we are actually offering your listeners a discount for listening to your amazing podcast. So if they use promo code Bird Dog Babe at checkout, we'll give them 10% off for being loyal listeners of yours.
Oh, that is so cool. Thank you guys.
Oh, our pleasure.
That, and you know, and even you know, if people don't have kids of their own, or you know, in that approximate age, you know, somebody's kids that could use these books. I guarantee it.
A lot of people have come back and told us that they've given these books as gifts to like their niece or nephew or their friend's kid who and they just wanted to put these wildlife species in their hands in a way that wasn't going to upset the parents with having a bunch of like guns and stuff in them either.
I think it is a fantastic idea for a gift. I'm anxious to get some for my kiddos, but we all know somebody's kids that could use these and get a little bit more in tune with the outdoors and the ethics of responsible hunting and conservation. I love what you guys are doing, James. It's awesome in every single way. As somebody that I love to get my kids outdoors and learning and taking them along hunting and fishing, and the more real life stuff we can put into their education and growing up to be responsible ethical conservationists themselves, the more I am happy to put in front of them, because you know they're going to go their own direction, but we can just hope that fire that we ignite in their heart continues to grow and grow And if they do decide to do what we do one day, that they're going to do it in the best manner, and or at least be able to teach it and be a good example.
Couldn't have said it better.
Yeah. So, well, thank you very much for joining us. Loved having you on and learning about what you guys are doing and the efforts that you're putting behind it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Courtney, for the invitation. And I really enjoyed the conversation. And let me know about Chachalaca if you want to come down. Just give us a holler.
I totally am. I totally am. Every time I hear you say that, it makes me think of the kombucha. What is that?
Kombucha, drink? Yeah.
Kombucha. Yeah, kombucha. Like, I'm going to go hunt some chocolaca and drink some kombucha.
It makes for a great conversation. I'll tell you that.
It does. All right, James. Thank you.
Courtney, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, share it and tag me and someone that would benefit from listening. Please help me out by giving the podcast a rating and review on whichever platform you're listening from, and hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Be sure to join me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And if you're interested in some Bird Dog Babe swag or gear that I rely on, be sure to check out the store on my website, thebirddogbabe.com.
Until next time, Bird Dog Babes, keep them versatile!